We're talking about the history of humanity and how we have been influenced. And it's like, we deserve to know that. And we deserve the technologies that are being suppressed.
We're being exposed to only so much information. We're not being fully educated. There's a difference.
What percentage of UAP sightings, in your belief, go unreported by our pilots?
I would estimate we're somewhere near 5% reporting, perhaps. 5% reporting.
There isn't
perhaps.
Anything, then why the push to cover it up? Then why the
We must
push
guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
By then, I had already accepted this new paradigm of there being, as Senator Inouye said, and I'm quoting, there's a secret government with its own Air Force,
its own Navy, its own fundraising mechanism, and the ability to pursue its own ideas of the national interest, free from all checks and balances, and free from the law itself. Free from the law itself.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast. We have created a referendum known as the It Can't Be a Joke Revolution and Initiatives. This is a movement of thought and consciousness. Our mission is to educate and plant the seeds of curiosity surrounding the issues that we deem most critical, with the goal of freeing humanity from the powers that seek to hold us down.
We use this as an opportunity to not only expose the corruption in our country and world, but to discuss the importance of consciousness, self-awareness, and spiritual evolution as we seek to crack the riddles of life and our purpose on this planet.
Melissa?
Kevin?
Let's blast off.
Let's.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to episode 5 of the It Can't Be a Joke podcast. We got a whole boatload of stuff to discuss with you today, and I think it's going to be one of our most important topics that we talk about, because every single person who listens to this relates to this. What we're covering today is 9/11.
Yep, the attacks on the World Trade Center, the 3 buildings that collapsed that day.
And we're going to talk more about the 3 buildings. I didn't even know there was a third one until a few months ago when you told me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most people don't.
Most people do not know that.
No, it's incredible that so many people still don't. They're like, huh? Just there's so much involved in the World Trade Center areas. And it's a lot to dive into. We're going to get out as much as we can without overwhelming you.
About 14 years ago, 13 years ago, I had heard from some people through the grapevine that 9/11 is conspiracy. And I remember when I heard that for the first time, I was just like, what, really? Like, the planes clearly, in my mind, I was like, the planes flew into the building. And I was so busy in college and everything else working that I wasn't able to spend too much time really focusing on it. And life goes on. But I know your story is a bit different. And you're the one who really turned me on and had me get redirected back to this topic.
Yeah. Now,
can you share a little bit more about that?
So in 2008, I found out about this, and I was taking a college course, English, and we had to write a 10-page persuasive paper, and I chose the 9/11 event. And I just gave him my topic, and he tried to persuade me the other way, and I was like, no, I'm doing it. And so when I did the paper, he gave me like a 95%. And you had to get up and present in front of your class. But I'm just like giving them all these facts, starting out with all of the scientific facts, you know, the actual like idea of the plane crash and the fire. And the kids just like looked at me like I was an idiot. I don't know. They thought I was a kook, but they just kind of laughed at me. And then all the kids in my class just did not understand why I was pointing things out. So it's hard to talk about with people because they've been told by the media that it's disrespectful to believe this conspiracy theory to the victims of 9/11.
How is that disrespectful? It was either terrorists that from the Middle East that killed them, or terrorists from this country that have infiltrated like the CIA.
Yeah.
But you got a 95%.
Yes, I did. And
do you think that your professor was like, you blew his mind a little bit?
Yeah, because when you look at the science of how the building fell, what a controlled demolition is, the fact that there were tiny bone fragments, a couple centimeters long, and all of the businessmen that were involved, it's really hard to deny when you get all of these facts in front of you laid out. And I just said, here's what science and most scientists and engineers will say. When they saw the buildings collapse, they're like, something's not right about that. But most of us wouldn't know.
It doesn't make any sense how it fell. And yeah. I think we've all thought that too. I was in fourth grade when it happened. Anyone who was alive during that time, it's a flashbulb memory. You do not forget when you heard what happened. You do not forget what you saw on the TV. You were in seventh grade.
Yeah.
And so for us, it's like we lived through it happening and then the call for war. It would be classified as nationalism, right? Like, yeah, America, let's go.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm a kid, so I'm just like, they attacked us.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people were because we're all just in such shock.
Yeah.
On what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it makes people want to get up and stand up and fight for their country.
Right.
You know?
So many people enlisted.
Mm-hmm.
And they were ready to go fight and die for this country because they 100% believed that some people had orchestrated this from the Middle East, from the desert. And we all thought that. We all thought that.
Yeah.
And there's a really big myth that goes around 9/11. But the myth is 19 hijackers directed by Osama bin Laden took over 4 commercial jets with box cutters. And while evading the air defense system, NORAD, they hit 75% of their targets. In turn, World Trade Center towers 1, 2, and 7 collapsed due to structural failure through fire in a pancake fashion, while the plane that hit the Pentagon vaporized upon impact, as did the plane that crashed in Shanksville. The 9/11 Commission found that there were no warnings for this act of terrorism, while multiple government failures prevented adequate defenses. That's what we've been presented. So many people were bought into going to war and going to the Middle East, but we all knew a few years after that, and a lot of people knew at that time too, if I wasn't in fourth grade, but oil, big word, oil.
Yeah. So the Bush administration, they were in office. Dick Cheney, who was the CEO of Halliburton, one of the biggest oil companies.
And he was the CEO right before becoming vice president, right?
Yeah, he resigned in 2000.
But Dick did not just come in out of nowhere.
And now it's time for this week's You Need to Know.
Dick Cheney. Born in Lincoln, Nebraska, we do not claim him. He then grew up in Casper, Wyoming. He attended Yale University. He really must think he's much better than us, doesn't he? Stupid skull and bones, bitch. Before earning a Bachelor of Arts and Master of Arts in Political Science from the University of Wyoming. He began his political career as an intern for Congressman William A. Steiger, eventually working his way into the White House during the Nixon and Ford administrations. He served as White House Chief of Staff from 1975 to 77, where in 1978 he was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives and represented Wyoming's at-large congressional district from 1979 to 1989, briefly serving as House Minority Whip in 1989. He was then appointed Secretary of Defense during the presidency of George H.W. Bush, and held the position for most of Bush's term from 1989 to 1993. As secretary, he oversaw 1991's Operation Desert Storm. While out of office during the Clinton's administration, he was the chairman and CEO of Halliburton from 1995 to 2000.
And was kind of running things because if you were around watching the news when Bush was in office for way too long, wasn't the best speaker.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. You fool me, you can't get fooled again.
And him and Dick Cheney didn't have to abide by the law. They could go into meetings together because Bush didn't have the chops to back himself up in any of it. You saw that in the live interviews.
He was a goober. He was smoking Alabama Kush. all know it.
Well, he did a lot of coke in college.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, in Yale?
He went to Yale.
He went to Yale.
So did Dick Cheney.
So did Dick, and so did
Clinton.
John Kerry,
Bill Clinton, and Hillary Clinton.
Bill and Hillary went there too.
Mm-hmm.
And so remember, if you from one of the first episodes, Skull and Bones is the secret society that they're from. Secret societies, I just think are so creepy.
Well, the Skull and Bones also have like a symbol that they use, and it's like probably like making a cross with their, I don't know what it is, something with fists.
Skull and crossbones.
Okay.
It's like, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, is that what it is?
I don't know.
I think so.
People have said that they've seen George Bush making those like symbols.
He would.
I don't, yeah. I wouldn't know that is what he was doing though. That's how, it's so weird.
Still living in his college days.
Yeah,
Skull and Bones, baby! So, back to kind of the myth behind it, what we know. Both buildings fell the exact same way. It doesn't seem accidental they collapsed that way. They both fell the exact same way. Don't forget, these buildings have enormous steel columns that run up the middle of them that should withstand a plane.
Mm-hmm.
You could not find a desk, a chair, a cell phone, a computer, anything. Yet the hijacker passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center. Like, that stayed intact.
Right? Mm-hmm.
But you couldn't find anything else. Also, some other background is that we've heard that there could have been explosions before the tower went down. Let's jump into the science behind what went down.
So the Twin Towers, I should say, they were 1,300 something feet tall, 110 stories each, give or take five or six more stories if you count the ones underground.
Basement.
The basement, yeah. So the first building, the North Tower, was hit between like the 93rd and 99th floor. That's where the plane came in. And you think about, okay, there's still 110 stories high. There would still have to be 90 stories underneath of it to fall down. If it was a pancake collapse, meaning each floor, boom, 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 falls on top of the other. That's what it is. But that didn't happen because the building collapsed at a free fall within 7 seconds. And with, what, 92 stories underneath it? That's scientifically impossible unless the steel frame is blown out. Like you said, at the bottom, what was there? Just dust and rubble. So the second tower was hit at a slightly lower, between the 75th and 80th floor. And it also fell the exact same way, like Kevin said, at a free fall. Within 6 seconds. That's not possible with what the commission report has stated and what the media outlets stated as well. And some of this footage is available because people held on to it when they were silenced back during all of the chaos. Some of those things came out. The guy who talked about what they found at Ground Zero, I mean, I saw footage that people posted online that they just silenced him. They just literally cut him off and cut away to a new story. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're out of time, actually. But, you know, they did that whole thing to scientists and engineers. And so then, if you didn't know, World Trade Center 7, the seventh building collapsed. Again, this building was not as high. It was like 47 stories high. Same thing, collapsed within 5 or 6 seconds, all into itself, and they said it was caused by debris and a few building fires.
So we have World Trade Center 1 and 2. Those are the ones that the Twin Towers, most people know about. Can you go back and explain World Trade Center 7? Like, mm-hmm. No one has heard of it before.
World Trade Center 7, first of all, the World Trade Center Building 7 was owned by a huge business tycoon Larry Silverstein, and he bought the properties to rent them out. And Building 7 had a certain number of employees, but not just employees, but people who would rent space. So in Building 7, you have all of these different companies, like the Department of Defense, the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, the U.S. Secret Service. You had American Express, a lot of banking companies, the IRS, Regional Council, Federal Home Loan Bank, and the New York City Office of Emergency Management. So when that building, when they bombed it and blew it up like a controlled demolition, they basically blew up all of the files that were in that building. And Enron, who you probably remember back from maybe the 90s, they had all of these scandals going on. One of the biggest energy companies in the world. They had fraud all over the place. They had earned like somewhere around $100 billion in revenue in the year prior to 9/11 attacks. And they were being investigated. And all of that information, the CIA, all of their files, everything that was being investigated on them, they didn't make a separate copy. And those were all destroyed when that building was blown up.
It is crazy to think that we can go, majority of people can, you can go on with your life and not even know that there was a third building. Look it up, World Trade Center 7. And it falls the exact same way as the other buildings, but it wasn't hit by a plane.
Some of the reporters that were some of people's honest reactions were like, it looks like one of those controlled demolitions. That's a little bit on that information. And then Larry Silverstein in July of 2001, he changed his insurance policy on the Twin Towers 1 and 2 to something where he would get awarded $3.5 billion. This included a policy about any terrorist attacks. And after all that was said and done, because a lot of the insurance companies were like, we don't even have this amount of money to give you to insure you. After all was said and done, he got $4.5 billion from the World Trade Centers, and he did not put very much money up for it. There were people investigating what was going on as far as insider trading and, again, just fraudulent transactions between these businessmen and these banks. And they called a big meeting in World Trade Center Building 7. The FCC was in there too. And so all of these people who were trying to be whistleblowers within the company, you know, some of them were like, had really high up positions, and they were just trying to do justice, do what is right. And all of the corrupt people that orchestrated this meeting were calling from home, and then everyone in the conference room died that day.
So the people, the corrupt ones, called in to the meeting.
Mm-hmm. From their phones, like, you know, one of those big office meetings.
Big room, the phones in the middle of the table.
Yeah.
And Silverstein wasn't there, obviously. But the people that were there, was that exactly where the plane hit too? Or...
Oh, in Building 7, there wasn't a plane.
Oh, yeah. That building was just...
The thing of what we were just talking about, in the 9/11 Commission report, it says that it was nearby debris, which, yeah, the debris flew far because of explosives that were used. But because there were a couple fires on different floors, it weakened the structure and it collapsed. Also, what most people know is the Twin Towers collapsed. First, still buildings to collapse due to a fire, you know, city skyscrapers ever in the history.
Period. And if the pancake theory doesn't make sense, because the columns, the steel columns, mm-hmm. would still be up.
They'd still be standing if the pancake theory happened, but there was no steel columns standing up. Everything was just dust and blown to bits. And one other really important thing I need to mention about it is after the 1993 bombing at the World Trade Center, it was harder for let's say Silverstein, to rent it out and make money. There was actually a health violation with the infrastructure of the building. They had been built, the World Trade Center buildings, in the mid-70s, and they used asbestos, which is a carcinogen, which they used all throughout the World Trade Center. They sprayed it on the steel columns. So it's this carcinogen that came out in the 80s that it was cancer-causing. It was very toxic. And buildings like the Twin Towers cost Larry Silverstein millions and millions and millions of dollars every year to upkeep and to do everything that they needed to do to get them up to code. And he predicted that getting all of the asbestos out of the buildings would cost around $1 billion. And there were reports, you can look this up on the internet, a lot of the first responders, firefighters, EMTs, policemen, all the first responders you can think of that were at Ground Zero have, to this day, are still developing diseases and cancer because of how strong the asbestos was, and that poof, it was in the huge dust clouds that the explosive, you know how there's so much smoke. Yeah. Area schools had to do tests on their AC units, and basically people were just like, you just have to assume that there's asbestos
everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that he also wanted to bring the buildings down because he didn't want to pay $1 billion to get the asbestos out?
Yeah, because people might also say, well, if that's true, then why didn't they just go after Building 7 where all of those, you know, files were? Well, because the Twin Towers were the biggest money suck on him.
Well, and they wanted an excuse to go to the Middle East.
Oh, well, yes. Right? That too. Yeah.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, that's got to be why they hit the other two towers too, to make a spectacle and to get the people to rally, just like, you know, Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, okay, yeah, we're ready to go to war.
Yes.
Hey, thanks for tuning into this episode. If you are enjoying our show and support the It Can't Be a Joke mission, please consider leaving us a review on your streaming platform, following us on X, YouTube, Instagram, and Rumble, and showing your support by purchasing one of the many items we have for sale on our merch shop, which can be found in our link tree on our social media sites.
We're always looking to work with like-minded individuals, so if you're interested in working together or sponsorship opportunities, shoot us a message or email. Thanks again for all of your support.
Now, back to the episode.
Les Robertson, he was the structural engineer for building the World Trade Centers, the Twin Towers.
Mm.
And he said that they built those in a way that they could sustain multiple plane hits.
Yes, exactly. And if a plane does hit, the fires they cause don't get up to 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit, which is how hot it needs to be to melt steel.
So how did they...
And all the engineers, they talk about that.
It's just important to know that the structural engineers have been on record saying, we built these to sustain... They could sustain planes.
And each floor, I believe, like most buildings, have sprinkler systems that will go off. So that fire... I don't know. That's probably not a good piece of evidence. But it's still, like... They knew exactly...
Well, we just know that every single floor just suddenly just comes down in on itself. It doesn't make any sense when you look
Mm-mm.
at it.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
No.
And after the collapse, you know, that we've all seen, we all remember just the huge pile of wreckage and rubble.
Mm-hmm.
There were hot spots of over 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And doesn't that... That takes out the whole jet fuel burning hypothesis, right? Because that's over 200 degrees Fahrenheit hotter than jet fuel can burn in most controlled conditions.
Yeah, so like temperature and then heat are two different things. Like people are saying, well, there was this much jet fuel. Well, because there's that much jet fuel, the science behind it, it doesn't change the temperature. It just means there's more heat. If that makes sense. Oh, the fire was bigger. The fire still didn't, the temperature didn't get hotter.
Mm-hmm. And it's not going to melt the steel beams.
No.
It's not hot enough. So underneath all the wreckage, they got 2,000 degree Fahrenheit. They said it looked like a foundry. Like if you can, okay, for my Lord of the Rings fans out there, let's go. We're going to go to the city of Dale, right? Or no, it's right. It's the Dwarven home. Oh, God, I can't be a noob right now. This is my... Erebor. Erebor. God, I was getting on the spot and I was getting nervous. Erebor. Imagine the molten, you know, metal flowing through the place. That's basically... They said it looked like a foundry.
Yeah, molten metal. And that was seen up to like 3 weeks after the attacks. I mean, that's some explosives shit right there.
They found debris. In the debris, they found thermite.
Oh, yes. I remember this. Refresh my memory, though. So
thermite is essentially, it's used to cut through steel like butter. And it blows up like a dust. You can see that dust coming out of the windows. As the building's coming down, you can see dust, let's say 10 floors below that one, shooting out like thermite just blew up.
Yeah, they call them squibs. Little explosive, just poof.
Yeah.
Bit of white dust.
Which it'll cut, basically. If they put it on the steel columns, they blow it up, it cuts those steel columns right in half, like I said, like butter. And I remember you told me this. Weren't there teams of people that were working on the elevator shafts?
A couple weeks leading up to the attacks, one of the Bushes, Marvin Bush.
So brother of George and Jeb.
Brother of George and Jeb. So he was in charge of security at the World Trade Centers. And there was construction done on the elevators in the weeks leading up to the attacks.
So Marvin, one of the Bushes,
mm-hmm.
was in charge of the security at the World Trade Centers.
Yes.
Coinky dink?
No.
It can't be a joke.
In all seriousness, it can't be a joke.
So now we have 10 floors falling per second.
Right.
That's how fast this thing came down. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense at all. And another part that has to go with explosions happening. So basically what we're just talking about right there is people were working on the, you know, elevator shafts that they can install the thermite bombs on them to explode at a certain time. Like the building will fall like that.
And it is what they do to controlled demolitions, get rid of old buildings that have been sitting around forever when they need to just...
Yeah.
Okay, no one's been using this building for 50 years. We really need to get rid of it. So that's what they use them for.
Controlled, and then it just falls in on itself.
Yeah.
Not one plane hitting the top of one of the strongest buildings ever made. So on the topic of explosives being set, there is a man named William Rodriguez, who is a 20-year employee of the World Trade Center. And he shares his story.
Our office was on the B1 level. As I was talking to a supervisor at 8:46, and all of a sudden we hear, boom! An explosion so hard that pushed us upwards. And it came from the basement between the B2 level and the B3 level. And when I went to verbalize, we hear, boom! The impact of the plane on the top.
When he shared that story, it reverberated through me. I'm like, holy shit, I felt the boom.
Yeah. He lived it.
He's in the basement floor. He hears an explosion so loud and strong that it pushed them up off the floor. Like, they literally took flight.
Oh, my God. Also, in the basement, because they were explosives, the walls, the cement walls in the basement were pushed out. There were some reports of like part of the Hudson River and water getting into places in the basement where people are like, okay, how is this happening?
Doesn't make sense.
Because they had to blow out a little bit of space. I think that's what controlled demolitions do, to my understanding. I could be wrong, but I think they kind of blow out the walls in the basement so everything falls into that. Yes.
Like a big pocket.
Uh-huh. When there were first responders, EMTs, and firefighters trying to rescue people out of this building, in some of those clips you see from the news, they all start screaming and freaking out because they didn't know the buildings were going to collapse. Yeah, a lot of them heard bombs going off, and they were probably like, what the fuck? But I don't think with what they, you know, oh, a plane crashed, and now we're running to save these people. No one thought that the buildings were going to just collapse like that. So no warnings about anything.
Because it was a pure act of evil.
Yes.
To do this. Yeah, they mentioned, oh, we didn't have any warnings. You can hear Condoleezza Rice saying, we couldn't have predicted anyone flying a plane. And Bush said it too. Anyone flying a plane into a building.
Exactly.
They said they had no warnings, which we know is not the case. We know that that's not true. So 2 years before the attack, NORAD, which stands for the North American Aerospace Defense Command, these are guys looking out for our best interests, conducted so 2 years before the first attack, NORAD conducted exercises using hijacked airliners as weapons, and one target was the World Trade Center. And there's a picture that I have that I want people to Google.
Yeah, this is my point of how they do exercises. They like simulate things before they actually happen.
Right.
It's weird.
Yes. And take a quick second. Google emergency response to terrorism self-study. And it's going to pull up a picture from 1997 with the two, what looks exactly like the Twin Towers, with a target aligned on one of them. So they were definitely preparing for something like this to happen. And so there's other operations as well. One of them's called Operation Moscow. This is a simulated activity where they crashed a plane into the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. This was in October 2000. So a year before, they had a simulated activity where someone crashes a plane into the Pentagon. So that was Operation Moscow. Also, the Federal Aviation Administration received 52 warnings of Al-Qaeda 6 months before the bombings, but did nothing. There's also a SEAL team, Able Danger, that they were told they can't speak to members of Congress or the Senate, even though they found two of the three terrorist cells. A lot of the hijackers were still alive. After it, like, they didn't die. Like, one of them's recorded for saying...
They just used his name?
They just used his name, but he was living over... I can't exactly remember where, but let's just say he was just living over in India or Pakistan. Mm-hmm. He's like, when I saw my face and name on the list, I was in disbelief. Now,
He said, I don't even know how to fly a plane.
I don't even know how to fly a plane. So some of the hijack... Like, obviously, some of the hijackers are dead, but some of them aren't even... They're just normal people living their lives in a different part of the world. And then we also know that there were hijackers that lived with FBI informants. So the source here is CBS News. They basically go on to talk about how there's an FBI informant who was speaking with the people who might be the hijackers. Two of the September 11th hijackers live in San Diego. They rented a room from a man who reportedly worked as an undercover FBI informant, highlighting the lack of cooperation by the nation's law enforcement and intelligence agencies. They're not communicating. They're not warning about the disaster that's about to happen. They're helping coordinate it. Newsweek also broke a story that two of the hijackers were working closely with the FBI, but also another article alleged that the hijackers may have trained at U.S. bases. The source there, Newsweek. U.S. military sources have given the FBI information that suggests five of the alleged hijackers of the planes that were used in the terror attack received training at secure U.S. military installations in the 1990s.
They were working with the U.S. military, and there were other people working with the U.S., specifically on the morning of the September 11th attacks.
Osama bin Laden's family has a very close connection. It's not just Osama, but it's his entire family. It is claimed that some of his family was living in Falls Church, Virginia, right next to the CIA headquarters. Very close to the CIA headquarters. Another very interesting fact, Osama spent 2 weeks at an American hospital in Dubai and was treated by an American doctor and also met with a CIA member while he was staying at the hospital. This happened 2 months before September 11th. Osama flew to Dubai, 10 days of treatment at an American hospital there. where he was visited by the local CIA agent. The source for that information is The Guardian. Salim bin Laden, who is Osama's brother, he hired a man named James Bath to handle all the investments in the U.S. for the bin Laden family. James was also a lifelong friend and International Guard pilot with George W. Bush.
Mm.
So, another direct connection.
Indeed.
Salim to James, James to George. In 98 and 2000, George H.W. met with the bin Laden family on behalf of a company called the Carlyle Group. Carlyle Group is a investment firm.
Mm-hmm.
They handle, you know, managing assets, and they have billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars
mm-hmm.
that they manage.
There was a lot of insider trading that happened right before the attacks. Like I said, Marvin Bush, the security system, the software was owned by the Bush administration. It was claimed that the Carlyle Group gained from the September 11th attacks because it owned military contractor United Defense. United Airlines were the planes that were flying, and so many people took stock out of United Airlines right before the attacks because their stocks plummeted. And so did all of these investors like Carlyle, JP Morgan, people who had bought stocks with these companies. They knew they were going to crash. But JP Morgan and all those companies, because of insider trading, said, hey, buy share in Raytheon because those shares went up 37% because they knew they were going to be developing weapons of
missile systems.
Yeah, missiles for the war that they were wanting to get all the Americans on board for. So all of those companies have ties.
And then back to Larry Silverstein, made billions on billions of dollars.
It was the biggest insurance payout in history.
At the cost of 3,500 people being murdered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all of these corrupt corporations that we've been mentioning in all of our episodes have stake in this.
Is anyone noticing a theme here? And and who is responsible for all these things we're talking about? We got large banks, investment firms. We have oil. We have all the oligarchs that control all the money. They're the reason behind people's madness in this world. In this world that is being created, the simulation, this fabrication of reality that we're being forced to live in.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode. To stay on top of everything we're doing, from news updates, new episodes, and new merch drops, follow us on X, Rumble, and YouTube by searching It Can't Be a Joke.
If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and comment on your preferred streaming platform, and check out our merch shop in the show notes below. We are always open to hearing your ideas on how we can make the world a better place and bring down this elitist cabal trying to control every aspect of our lives. Despite the forces we are up against, band together and don't stop looking up.